Morning Glory.
Trying to be a figure to my fine nose they can count on. Thousand voices in my head debating where I fell off. Other thousands saying, bruv, how you fall before you even started. Keep on marching, tell your people that it's on, cause it's on. My Hurangi boy going off on the songs. Cut Hurangi boy, keep a hold to himself. When am I gonna stress? So I go to the death. Wear that tie on my chest. Early morning on top for the new week. These days I don't trust it, even if you offer it to me. Too many false flags and high hopes. Burn out on people throwing smoke screens, bluffs and tight ropes. So I keep my friends closer than my enemies. They say it never made sense, could be the death of me. The city gets the best, even of the strong survivors. While my home is what it is, gives me my energy. Big mana, mana. Foundation run deep, keep it 100. Keep my family close, if you know me, you know. That's why I bring them every time I put down at the show. Matter of fact, if you see me, you best believe I'm in a whole different season. I'm trying to open up the limitations of my being. I'm not playing, so ain't no game that I compete in. Fuck up, I'm on the record, so you know that when I say this, the best thing going, I really mean it. Sight so cold, the headphones keep freezing. Let me pull whole kid to do right now, I'm representing mine now. Boy.
Poho Kiriru by Silas Futura, who is sitting in front of me right now. Morena.
Morena. Mauri ora.
Welcome to the BFM studio on this beautiful sunny day. How are you?
Thank you. It feels really cool to be here. It's been quite a long time and we're in a new building or a new floor and this is exciting.
Last time you came, I think you were in the lounge for our Carhartt Live day.
Oh, that was a really good day.
Yeah. Far out. And this track is off your new album, Life Begins After Despair, which was released at the beginning of March, and we love it. So thank you for coming in to have a chat about that and your life, because you're up to some interesting things, and I'm going to ask you about them. First, it was great to see you on Sunday night at Double Whammy, playing alongside Great South at the Noah Records fundraiser.
Mm.
How long have you been playing with Peyton?
Oh, man. I've been playing with Peyton since 2016, maybe earlier. I feel like he's like my, I've made more music with him than I've made with anyone else.
You know?
Like we've just kind of been in each other's corner since the beginning. So it's been really cool.
How did you two meet?
He came to a show at Low Tide, which was a cool space back then. And they had this night called Keith Makes a Beat. And Keith was this amazing band. They would just play music. And they would just adapt to whoever came up onto the mic. It was like an open mic night, but with a live band.
Like freestyle kind of.
Totally.
Yeah, wow. Yeah.
And so we kind of met through that. he had heard one of my songs, and so he was like, "Oh man, I love your music." And I was like, "Hey," like I just hadn't really experienced that kind of thing before. And so it was cool. We just kicked it from then. I made a music video for him, and then we just kept making music. It was cool.
Yeah. Do you play in any other bands?
Not at the moment. Yeah. We had a band a wee while ago. Actually, it was quite a long while ago now, called Hot Knives. That was really fun.
great name.
Yeah. We didn't have social media. We didn't have an album out, but we could pack a room every time we played. It was like a live music movement, which was really cool.
Yeah. And because how many instruments do you play and what do you specialize in?
I wouldn't say I'm very good at playing any. Like, I play them all kind of mildly well, but I would say keyboard is kind of my weapon of choice. And then producing, and then Taonga Puoro has completely taken over my life. That's kind of what I've been doing.
Yeah, tell us a bit about that. How's that journey been? How did you come to that instrument, and maybe explain it a bit for listeners at home who might be unfamiliar?
Yeah, for sure. Taonga Puoro is like a broad term to encapsulate all of the instruments of Te Ao Māori, even a few that have come through from the Pacific. And it's just a really beautiful space. I think that like each piece is like its own person. It has its own modi and its own life force, and you really start to feel that when you make them and you play them. You're like, whoa, this one's different, or this one's got a bit of an attitude. And like, it's a real nice relationship to build. I came into it maybe 4 years ago when I was living up north, and this carver up there kind of took me in for a day and just showed me how to make a kuowo. And so I had this little piece that's probably about the size of my finger, and I tried playing it for like 3 days. I was just blowing wind. Nothing was happening. And then eventually it just kind of clicked, and I was hooked. And so I got into carving. I went and studied whakaero at Te Wānanga o Aotearoa, and Taonga Puoro was kind of like my extracurricular, you know, like I was just so keen to do that. And so here we are, like, you know, 4 years later, or maybe 2 or 3 years later, of carving, and met this beautiful group of people called Tāmaki Ororo, and we kind of catch up as often as we can. We have big wānanga maybe every 2 months, and in between there we're just playing together, and anytime someone has a gig we'll go and support, or like anytime anything's happening we'll bring our Taonga Puoro with us and we'll play, and it's just such an awesome, growing, lively space, you know?
How beautiful. And is the idea that they should all be carved by your own hands, or do you sort of share them around? How does it work?
They definitely tend to be shared around a lot. Yeah. I think some people are really enthusiastic about playing. Some are enthusiastic about the healing properties and that kind of rongoā side of Te Ao Māori. Some people love the stories. Some people love carving. So it's kind of like that's the cool thing about this group, is it's just such a diverse group of people that are all so passionate about the same thing. We're learning so much from each other. It's really cool.
Yeah, that's amazing. Do we hear them on your new album?
They're all through my album.
Yeah.
And they're all through Peyton's album Great South, sorry. And yeah, I'm so excited because it feels like it's happening now, you know, like it's been happening.
Yeah.
But it really feels like there's like this huge energy happening right now.
There's
super cool.
Definitely kind of a groundswell with it. Like, yeah, Mokotron.
Oh, crazy.
And Larson and
yes,
everyone that is, yeah, kind of following that practice. It's quite amazing to see it.
For sure.
Yeah.
I've got to take my hat off to Rahana, like, and I appreciate that dude. Like, he has been such an advocate for this space and such a welcoming figure for a lot of people who are curious, and has worked through Wi-Fi and Noah Records, and everything he's involved in is like, it's like that fuel source, you know, like it's like, it's helping people come in the door, and it's beautiful. Yeah.
Does having a musical creative community help you as an artist?
Oh, for sure. 100%. I feel like I spent so long in my youngers, especially in the early 20s, like feeling like I have to do everything by myself, you know, that classic rubbish that people go through. And now being in my 30s, I can't believe how beautiful it feels to be in community. It's so inspiring. And I don't know, it's just, it changes the way you see the world, I think, when you work in collective. And I feel like that really felt like that other night at the Noah Records fundraiser was just everybody was on the same co-popper. We're like sitting in that green room just like, wow, we all love this so much. And it was so easy to communicate that as a rōpū to like everyone who was there.
Yeah.
And it was just like that energy exchange, like immediately everyone in the crowd was like, yes, absolutely.
You know? I think I heard an air horn in the crowd. And your new album, it's a solo project, but is it a solo endeavor, or how many people were involved in making this happen?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely that kind of it takes a village to raise a child sort of vibe. I feel like that. Akshay helped me mix this project, and Ben helped me. Ben Lawson helped me master it.
Oh, legend, Ben.
Oh, crazy. We love these guys. Such an OG. But like in terms of the project itself, like Peyton, Great South has a track on there, but this was actually quite a solo endeavor, just because I think like the experience that I went through and I write about on the album was so life-altering, devastating, yet like the most important thing that's ever happened to me. It just kind of became this thing that I wanted to internalize. I really wrote this project for myself, and I know that sounds cliche, but it's like it's the first time I can actually like sit in that and really believe it with my whole body, you know?
Yeah.
And so by the time it actually became a project that was going to be released, I'd already kind of like sat with all of that stuff for so long, you know? So yeah, solo as.
What kind of sort of themes and issues are you plumbing in the record, if you don't mind sharing?
No, of course. I think basically what happened was I was at this point with music and creativity and running a studio, and I was just completely burnt out, and I'd just done too much. I was trying to be in too many places, and I just gave up on the whole idea of it. I was like, what am I even doing? I don't even want to be an artist anymore, because I was so tired. And at that time, I kind of met somebody, and she kind of like came into my life at this perfect resonant moment where like her trauma met my trauma, and we just went kaboom. And it was a life-altering event, you know? Like, I left the city. I didn't have anyone who I loved in my corner, because I kind of like exploded in this dramatic fashion, and I did that hiding. I went away for a year, and then by the end of it, I kind of came home. I moved back to my hometown around my family, and I just kind of sat in it and was like, what happened there? Like, how did all this happen? And realizing like, oh man, I chose a lot of this. Like, this was a change that needed to happen. Probably not that like hectic, but here I am now, and you know, like taking responsibility for that. And through that came this album. Yeah.
And with that sort of responsibility and accountability, it also allows you to give yourself some forgiveness and grace.
Oh.
Which is part of the healing process.
Yes. Yeah. You're so right. I mean, it definitely wasn't another stick to pick my, like to bash myself with, you know? Yeah. But it was like it was that moment of like coming back to the inner child and being like, damn, homie, I'm so sorry, you know? Yeah. Like, and through that, that's where that kind of life that begins after despair came from. It was
yes,
like,
I was going to ask you about the title. So
totally. Yeah.
Yeah, is that it?
That's it. It's like experiencing despair so deep that like your sense of self is completely shattered.
Yeah.
And then choosing life, you know, and like, and what comes from that, you know? Yeah. It's like family. It's like those close relationships you value so much. It's creating for the experience of creating rather than like the product that will come from it, or like the way people perceive it. And it was just, it was a beautiful thing to go through, I think, in the end. Like, now I've had the space from it too, you know? This album was 4 years in the making.
Yeah. And, did it start sort of during that healing chapter, or once there was sort of scar tissue, you'd scabbed up a bit and you're ready to make music about it?
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, all those beats were made through that period of like kind of coming down. And then I had like a whole year or two where I just didn't touch music. And by the time I came back to writing it, it was like I'd had that space from it just enough to kind of write about it. But what was really interesting was I'd write these songs and then I'd be listening back to the demos and I'd just like burst into tears, you know, like, because it was hitting things that like I hadn't truly processed yet, you know, and that was just so beautiful. Like, yeah, I'm so grateful. It's crazy.
Yeah. And of all the sort of tracks on the album, what are the most kind of, what hit you the hardest or are you most proud of if you had to choose a couple of favorites?
Oh man, yeah, they're all so special in their own way. I think The Gate being kind of, I really enjoyed writing that. I felt like the flow and the way that story came together was really rewarding for me as like as an artist, and working on the video with Simeon and the whole range of amazing professionals who just like absolutely nailed it. Like that was a really fun project from like a creative sense. But then I think it probably like there's like moments all through. There's one that stands out right now, which was like in Patience, where I kind of go back to the Papakāinga and like meet all this extended whānau and kind of feel like coming home to myself, like, oh man, like this is mean. And being there with my grandmother who's like 85 and hasn't had this relationship with her family and Te Ao Māori for like so much of her life, and getting to come home at the end of it and kind of like settle onto the whenua that like, you know, our tupuna grew up on. And it's like, that was just such an insane experience, you know, like such a, yeah, a beautiful, powerful thing that it's another one of those things that kind of just like breaks you out of that like who am I thing. It's like, whoa, this is like bigger than me, man. Like,
yeah,
I'm in the river. Yeah,
yeah, kind of different way to live. Mm. And I know you've made quite a few sort of life adjustments in recent years, including deleting all your social media accounts a few years ago. Sorry, you just hit a sip of water.
Sorry, my bad.
Why did you decide to do that? What and how's it been?
I decided to do that. I think I was realizing that even though I'd gone through all this stuff and I had kind of wrestled with these ideas of like validation from external people and, you know, the like count and the follower count, all this kind of stuff that we deal with, it was like, man, this stuff is still weighing on me. Like, even though I can sit back from it, every time I engage with these platforms, I feel sick, you know?
Yeah. What sort of, can you say more on that? Well, how does it make you feel? Because I feel like,
yeah,
I mean, I have similar feelings. I'm constantly kind of analyzing, yeah, how I feel about these mediums.
For sure.
That we sort of commoditize ourselves on.
Yes.
And you're sort of doing all this work for billionaires. And
yes.
But it's also, I find them enjoyable as well, seeing what my friends are doing.
Yeah.
And it's not, yeah. Yeah. How do they make you feel?
Yeah, you can't just point a broad brush at that, right, and say social media bad.
Yeah.
There's so much to it. And I think I really miss like having those connections with people. It means that the cool side of it is that it actually it forces me to go catch up with people in person and be like, show me your stuff. Like,
yeah,
pass me your phone. Let me see what you've been up to. But in terms of that feeling, I think that like no matter how toe you are and no matter where you're sitting, these platforms have been designed by like the brightest minds to make you feel like that, you know, to analyze everything and to, you know, I noticed the other day that I still have Facebook Messenger, and now rather than like having notifications for each chat that has messages, it's like every message in that chat. So now it's gone from like 3 messages to like 9 unread messages, you know, and it's all these little things that they're using to kind of give us this anxiety. And I don't want to get all conspiracy on it, but like, you know, it's very hard to navigate and keep that inner peace if like your world is surrounded by these, you know, these nudges all the time.
Yeah, and it expands your world in such a huge way, and you sort of feel plugged into this neural network that goes around the world, and
for sure,
it can sometimes take you out of yourself and where you are. That's sort of where I
100%.
Where I sit with it.
And that's so real.
Yeah, that's why sort of getting offline kind of takes me back to right now and me and my body, and I don't feel like a little brain floating in a network abyss.
It's so true, eh?
What do you do instead of doom scrolling on Instagram like the rest of us?
I feel like I have my own doom scroll, you know, like I still use YouTube a lot.
Yeah.
So I watch a lot of like makers on YouTube, 30-minute breakdowns. I watched this dude 3D print his own couch the other day. That was crack up. It took him maybe like a year and he was very burnt out, but it was very entertaining.
Yeah.
So I think like I really enjoy watching long form stuff.
Yeah. I like bushcraft videos.
That's sick. I love that. That's so cool. Yeah, I'm still online. I'm still messaging people. I'm still watching videos. I think I just chose to put the reels down because the scrolls was too hearty, you know, like yeah. It just got me too good.
Yeah, a lot of people I know have expressed the same frustration with the short form video thing. I don't watch it because I can't trust myself. I'm static right feeds only.
Yes.
But yeah, it's, yeah, and suddenly 3 hours has gone past and you've just been watching God knows what.
For sure.
Yeah.
And I think as well, like, I had that feeling like I can't get off this because, like, my music relies on it, you know, my community relies on it. This, like, I can't live without this. And then I guess that was the weirdo to me was like, really? Like,
yeah.
If you have to have these things that you hate so much,
yeah.
Is it even worth doing the thing in the first place? And so, like, throwing that whole idea away of, like, people need to hear my music or they need to keep up with what I'm up to, it just made it really easy to kind of lean back into that feeling of, like, I'm making to experience making rather than, like, there's a product here.
Yeah, like, the sort of purpose of what you're doing, is it, yeah, the... Is it the journey to get there or is it the final destination?
For sure.
And because you deleted Spotify, we took your music down off Spotify as well. Mm. Was that around the same time or?
That kind of came a bit later. I think once you make one big step like that, it's like you get kind of get excited and you start throwing everything out. I saw the kind of headlines around Daniel Ek spending money on, you know, investing in war. And I was like, yeah, that's kind of one step too far now. I mean, it had already been like that. And I think even the way that they're navigating the AI problem and the way that they've been squeezing us for so long, you know, and making it harder and harder for artists to connect with their listenership, it's like, it was like, oh, screw it, you know? Mm. And I get confronted on this all the time.
Really?
People are like, bro, put it on Spotify. What are you up to?
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, if my music is not good enough for it to be inconvenient, then I'm cool with that, you know?
Yeah, and it's hard because, you know, it's hard not to take someone else's decision and think how that reflects on your decision if it's a different one, you know? It's like, that person doesn't use this platform, but I do. Does that make me, you know?
Oh, true.
So I think that's something everyone sits with all the time.
That's a cool thing for me to think about too, in the way that I respond to people, because I don't ever want anybody to feel like their decision is like, you know, like I'm judging them. Yeah, it's not like that at all.
Exactly. And everyone's kind of just, yeah, obviously making do in a tricky industry. Mm. Have you noticed or spoken to any other artists who are feeling the same way about logging off certain platforms, or you alone in this, or are there other?
No, I think this is like, I feel like this is like actually the experience of most people.
Mm.
I think artists and people, you know, like, as in people that share stuff that isn't necessarily their art, you know, like, if the experience on these platforms, I think, is quite uncomfortable. And and we're getting good at having this conversation, but I think it's quite a huge leap to, like, actually leave it.
Yeah, know? Yeah. And because you're not anti-digital, that's the thing.
No,
no.
Not at all, yeah.
And you use Substack.
Yes.
To communicate with your, I mean, you've got Bandcamp as well, but you use Substack and publish newsletters on that.
Yes.
How's that been? And
oh,
yeah.
That's been crazy. I think that was like, I wanted to still give, like, people the opportunity to hear from me. And I still really wanted to communicate what I was up to. So that was kind of the call out I made when I left Instagram. I was like, I'm leaving tomorrow. You have a day to click this link and subscribe to the Substack. And Substack has its problems too, you know. It's not a perfect platform.
No, there are no perfect platforms,
no,
really.
Yeah. And I've been really encouraged by, like, the indie web movement as well. I was like, maybe I should learn HTML and make my own blog.
Yeah.
And then, like, I can get rid of that, you know. So it's all steps, I think, about, like, kind of reclaiming the space for us as artists.
Yeah, and goes back to the kind of early days of the internet. And, you know, the digital world, it has helped democratize creativity. And I know you've said creativity is a human expression not set aside for the lucky few.
Mm.
And so many of these tools and technologies do help people literally make music, put it out, publish it. It used to be a lot harder. So, yeah, it's opened it up for so many more people.
For sure. And I think as well, like, I think the other side of that way of thinking is, like, I've met quite a lot of people in my life that are like, I wish I was creative.
Mm.
And I'm like, homie, you are, you know, like, we all come at it from different angles. But, like, to make dinner is a creative act. And I think like the cool thing about leaning into being an artist and creativity is that like you really start to hone that muscle of like listening and noticing things in the world and processing them. And I think that is just the human experience. And I think that like, yeah, I just want to encourage people to make stuff. Like we just need to be creating.
Yeah. And offline and away from music, I know you've got a few hobbies and things you do, like carving. What else do you sort of spend your time doing?
At the moment, carving has been a big one for me. The writing is fun, like writing the Substacks. It's been really nice, like being able to kind of stretch an idea out. You know, you got just maybe 10 minutes of chat to actually describe an idea, which is really fun. I think everyone would really enjoy doing that.
It's almost like journaling practice.
Yes, it is, totally.
That people read.
Yeah, and that's also fun as well, you know, like getting one comment on a Substack that's 10 minutes long is like, it's worth like 10,000 likes, you know what I mean? It's such a huge effort for someone to sit down and give you 10 minutes and respond.
And
to respond with vulnerability, that like, that's it right there. That's what we've been looking for. That's what I've been looking for. What else have I been up to? I really got into gardening.
Nice.
I grew my own hue this year, which was really fun.
Yeah.
They're like kind of the gourds, the calabash gourds. Yeah. So I'm excited to see how those go as well. Yeah.
Yeah. And are there any carving projects you want to tell us about?
Yeah. I'm currently working on one at the moment. It's 3 Pu Tōrino, which is one of the Taonga Pūro. I have one here. People can't see it, of course. But it's basically shaped like a moth cocoon. And it's probably about the size of my forearm.
Yeah.
And these are for a father over in Brisbane who's Ngāti Kuri and Ngāti Wai.
Yeah.
And he wants to help his children reconnect to Te Ao Māori while they're living over in Australia. So he's kind of asked me to make these taonga pūro for him. And it's been really fun. Like I've been able to do research on his iwi and kind of go into those iwi stories and try and incorporate them into the designs that I'm making. So very rewarding.
It's
super cool.
It's really beautiful. We'll get a photo up on the BFM Instagram. Cool.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. That's also something that I've found really fun, especially playing with Great South, is like I'm on social media without being on it.
It's kind of win-win.
Yeah, it's perfect.
What's your favorite wood to work with?
I really like maire.
Yeah.
Maire is really cool. It's a super hard wood, very slow growing. We use it a lot for weapons these days. And it just has a beautiful smell and it responds to chisels really well. But honestly, all raka is so fun to play with.
Yeah.
You know? They all have different characteristics. This one here is an emu, which can be quite challenging, but also keeps you on your toes and keeps you listening, which is really cool.
Yeah, and Cody is quite unique as well, eh?
Yes, I love Cody. I'm working on a Cody piece at the moment, and it just has this shine. Even if it's the swamp Cody that's been in the ground for tens of thousands of years, it still comes up with the shine when you hit it. It's amazing.
Yeah. And back to music. What's your sort of plan for the album rollout? I know it came out earlier last month. You did a couple of shows. Are there any more lined up?
Yeah, well, I think I put it out, and then the day after, me and my partner went to Taiwan to go meet all her family.
Amazing.
It was super cool. We did 3 weeks of just like kai and whanaungatanga, and it was really nice, I think, to put the album out and then just step away.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it wasn't a rollout. It was like, hey guys, here's the email. See you later.
Yeah.
And then being able to come back and hearing those friends and those family members who had really sat with it and like, oh, this part here where you're talking about this, like I remember that and I feel for you, homie, and like these kinds of things were just like, it was just so beautiful. And to be able to come back, we played a show on Saturday night, which was the like album release show, and we did it at Poynton Studios, which was the studio I used to work in. So it was like a full circle moment, having all the people in the room that were like from that era, from before that era, and like family and the Taonga Pūoro crew as well. So it was like this meeting of these two worlds, and it was just a really beautiful celebration of life. And the vulnerability that everyone shared with me throughout the show as well, you know, like I got to be completely vulnerable on stage and felt completely comfortable in that story and those experiences, and then coming down and kind of talking to people and like having these beautiful, like, human to human connections, you know, of like, damn, I've been going through this, and you know, that really spoke to me, and like, it was just like the most rewarding show I've ever played, you know.
Yeah.
I've been doing this for like over 10 years and that one hit different, you know.
That's amazing. Have you got any more lined up or TBC?
Not at the moment, but in my mind, I was like, this is the only time I'm going to play this album, and I played it and I was like, I have to play that again. That was amazing, you know. So there'll be more for sure.
Yeah. And where can people get the album?
I've been sending people to Bandcamp.
Yeah.
I love what Bandcamp's still holding down, and I'm excited about these new platforms that are coming up that are doing similar things. Bandcamp is probably the best place, but if you're anywhere else in music except for Spotify, you'll find it there too.
Amazing. And what have you got planned this year? Anything exciting? Anything you're looking forward to gig-wise?
Oh, yeah.
Anything recommend?
I think follow the Great South movement and the Noah Records, the Liao movement. It's really exciting. I think that's probably where I'm going to put a lot of my musical energy.
Yeah.
I think if you're into Taonga Puoro, or if you're curious about this world and you want to learn more, check out Tāmaki Ororo on Facebook. We catch up all the time, and there's always opportunities to learn and get involved, and it's just a beautiful space. I couldn't recommend it enough. Yeah.
Cool. We'll put a link to that group in the show notes and your Bandcamp as well. This has been Silas Ventura, aka Silas McClintock, talking about his new album, Life Begins After Despair, which came out early March. It's really beautiful, and it's been really amazing kōrero with you. Thank you for coming in.
Yeah, kia ora, Emma. It's been awesome.
95 BFM.